On today's issue of Homo Superior.
Great. Succession.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
It's Always Sunny in Genosha.
Oh, that's cute.
One Piece of Husk.
Jesus.
Cancel that one.
What does that mean?
Is that on Skinamax?
Well, Brent is gay, and Kaylin's gay, and Clark is gay, and Ryan's gay, and Adam's gay. It's Homo Superior.
Welcome to Homo Superior, the only podcast that gives you life death drops every week. Issue 325, I'm Kaylin.
I'm Clark.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Brent Wingate. This week, inspired by the most recent episode of X-Men 97, we're pioneering new ways for you to enjoy our podcast, specifically through the exciting, cutting-edge technology of video games. Plus, Mutant Madness gets to the Ornate 8, so don't be Ornate late to vote because you're running out of time.
I was going to say I have mutant sadness that it's almost over.
Yeah. Pokemon, go to the polls. Clark newses it up, but let's see if he's been infected by the woke mind virus. Then it's our issues, and stick around to the end to see if Kaylin can do the plug pop noise in our Plug Me Daddy.
Spoiler alert, I can't.
We're going to see. I bet you can do it. But first, some housekeeping. We just recently released an interview, our creator crush, with Jordan D. White, current editor of the Xbox. Current outgoing editor of the Xbox, I guess. Kaylin, you were a part of that interview.
I was
a part of that interview. Adam, what did you think of it?
It's amazing. Listen to it.
Yeah.
Right,
what was your favorite insight from Jordan?
It was just so great when Jordan talked about his inspiration for wanting to become an editor at Marvel.
Yeah.
And then also how hard it is to be an editor at Marvel, because you're really juggling a lot of people's opinions. You're juggling the business.
Trick question. We didn't even talk to Jordan White.
We just put up a picture.
It's just static.
And 1 hour of static noise. Also, I love that answer because that is like what chewing through a marshmallow sounds like.
So, my God.
Kaylin, did you have anything you wanted to recommend about it?
I mean, it's a great, great creator crush, and we've done a lot of them, and I've enjoyed all of them. This one, I think, was just so insightful because he was so forthcoming about like how Krakoa was created, how they had to deviate when Hickman left. And then kind of, the changing of the guard that's happening in the next couple of months. The Krakoa era is ending. He's turning the keys over to Tom Brevoort, who, by the way, we're going to be talking to a little bit later on. Spoiler alert. He's just such a delightful guy, and he's very humble and just very sweet.
Yeah, we actually got to dispel some of the myths that have gone around on socials about what happened and why decisions were made during the Krakoa era. So I thought that was exciting too. Check it out. Also check out another creator crush coming out this upcoming Monday with Nathaniel Dahlquist. He is the creator of Hulkling and Wiccan.
Love is power.
Love is power.
Kaylin, what did you think of Brent and I interviewing Nathaniel Dahlquist?
I loved it when I saw you log into Zoom.
No, it was actually a really, really fascinating creator crush. It was our first actor one, which was really cool. Got to learn a little bit about just his overall history. He had a huge like starting career in a cappella from Yale, and then like got into, you know, various like theater experiences.
Did he sing on podcast?
He didn't. But Brent, you had some amazing a cappella X-Men related names.
Thank you.
No further questions.
Give us a single one.
No, well, okay. So one,
I remember a few of them.
One was the
Magnetones.
The Magnetones.
The
yeah.
Fantastic Chords. The
yeah, don't spoil them all because this is something for the.
I said one.
The audience to
I
listen to.
I can't help
to.
But they were just so good. The other funny thing that I'd like to mention, because if you haven't checked out this fucking show, you should be watching it on YouTube. It's called Darman Studios.
D-H-A-R space M-A-N-N.
With episode titles like Watch Single Mom is Shamed by Soccer Mom, She Lives to Regret It, and Mean Girls Shame Team for Anime. It's a short budget film that he starred in as a bodybuilder for.
Darman is just absolutely insane because all of it is like a made up confrontation that you would imagine some people have, but they just keep repeating it over and over again with very high quality footage and very low quality editing.
Yeah. That's great.
Hey, it sounds like us.
Yeah.
Let's get on with MCU Next TV, our weekly segment focused on the latest and greatest of the MCU Disney Plus TV shows. We're talking the fourth episode of X-Men 97, which is kind of a two-parter, if you will. The first half being Montendo, and then the second half being Life, Death, Part 1. Let's talk Montendo first.
Is it Montendo or Motendo?
Motendo. Motendo. You got
like
it.
Like Homotendo.
Yes. I just
Montendo. Monsanto has bought Nintendo, and finally the agricultural conglomerate has joined with the gaming empire.
This is probably the only problem I had with the episode, where I was like, Motendo is just the stupidest fucking name. I mean, like, there's no other way you could do
it.
Moga.
What do you think of what do you think of Mojoverse?
I love it.
It's a stupid fucking name.
Or Motari.
Motari. There was a few other. I mean, again, when we're the fucking system in the game that they show is definitely a Mega Drive.
Neo
Genesis.
Mojo.
Yeah. Neo Mojo. I like that.
That's
Mojo Switch.
Let's get into it. Ghibli must relive the X-Men's greatest adventures when she's transported into a 16-bit video game. In this house, we do not skip the intro because there's always wonderful context clues. The clues we see or the clips we see are Ghibli and Longshot in the second bout against Mojo. So this was season 3 or season 5, depending on when you watched it. In Longshot, there was Dark Phoenix, Child of Light in part 3. We had Cold Comfort. Obviously, we knew that was coming back with Forge. Confirmed that Storm is not involved in this, but I do find it funny that the X-Men never debriefed her ever, that they ran into an entire other government-based team that Forge was a leader of. And then we've got Emma Frost and the Hellfire Club. She was blocking out Charles. Lots of Dark Phoenix for an episode not about Dark Phoenix.
Especially since she's met Forge before.
She never did.
She did.
She met him in the Apocalypse episode
where they just randomly drew people in. In the second episode of the fifth season of the Phalanx Covenant, she...
That's what I'm saying. That's just they ran...
They're literally standing right next to each other when they all talk. And they're
They say, hi, my name is Forge.
They're right fucking next to each other. He talks...
So, Clark, you weren't here last week, so my no prize was Storm is that gay guy that can't remember anybody.
One thing that was forgotten... that some eagle-eyed viewers picked up on, not me, was that in the first three intros, Jean had her hair not in a ponytail, which was the clear indication that it was Madeline all along.
It's Madeline.
Terrible.
All along.
I think that's great. I love the little attention to detail.
But you got to wait to see when Magneto puts his hair into a ponytail, because that's Zorn.
It is currently down. When we start the episode, Remy, Rogue, and Magneto are having a dick measuring competition. You know, it's
Rogue's is the biggest.
For
it's
sure.
True. She stole it from Carol Danvers.
Mm-hmm. Magneto wastes three fucking spoons to get sugar. Fuck you. There's dishes to do in this house.
Sugar. My favorite is, I'll take a cappuccino if you're taking orders. And he says, luckily, I'm giving them. Fuck you, bitch.
Yeah. That is a good line.
Nice branded mugs. Say, in the X-Mansion, we have merch.
There's Jubilation on her 18th birthday. We get a Blue Rogaine comment by...
Very 1997 humor.
Lived for it.
Yeah.
So this show is not nothing but read in for filth. So someone's dad didn't get them a pony for his sweet 16. Magneto to morph. My parents perished when I was a child.
That's great.
Yeah, in the Holocaust. Jesus Christ.
This whole opening felt very much like a Golden Girls episode where they were just sitting around the table
eating cheesecake and like
serving
cunt.
I don't know how. Like first it was the suit, and then giving him a mug just makes Magneto look like an elderly lesbian.
I agree. He definitely makeups his face. Like it's a lot more contoured and a lot more blushed than before. But there's no time because Jubilee comes to celebrate. They got some nasty ass muffins on that kitchen table that no one ever eats. She wants to go to the arcade, and Magneto is a buzzkill. We then have Jubilee ranting to Roberto, reading really everybody. So she doesn't want to be freaking out about the professor. She doesn't care about Jean and her clone and Cyclops and his latest control issue.
Yeah, I'm like, fuck you. He's done everything right this entire run so far.
Everyone regressed to just shitting on
fuck
Cyclops.
You, Jubilee.
Well, he did send his son into the future.
That's true.
To me, that feels like you're not too controlling. Let time take the wheel.
Oh my god, I do love that that's the last thing that happens. So she's like, that fucking baby should have just got let go. Why is he crying so
and much? Cyclops just keeps whining and whining.
Everyone's actually off to the UN for Genosha, leaving the two of them at home. A line: the only people who hate video games are bad at video games. Is that true? What do you guys think?
Yeah. I think it's true. I think that you can be bad at video games and not hate video games. But if you hate video games, you are bad at them.
I mean, did your parents ever deal with this? Like, they hated the violence in video games. But it was like, when I started playing them, it was even like pre like the Mortal Kombat
side stuff. Right.
Yeah, and like, they just did not
They're
like...
They're just squishing... That plumber's jumping on that guy's head. That Italian's jumping on that guy's head. Yeah. Stop him.
Watch out.
They're anti-Italian is what I'm saying.
That Q-Bert tube is... avoiding hexagons.
Lots of cursing though in that one.
I mean, when the widow Pac-Man, you know, like.
I mean, I do actually agree that I think most people that don't like video games had got bad at them at some point. I know I used to have an ex where there was like a jump to 3D, and that really threw them for a loop. It was like, if you made it from 2D to 3D, and if you made it from 3D to like HD. Then you were like a real gamer, but there's a lot of like ramp off points of like, this is just too much.
I mean, it is still at a point in time where, you know, video games had been around, but there was like the, you're lazy if you like video games. It's wild today when someone's like, you play video games? What kind of loser are you? Like, get with it.
Yeah.
Get with it.
You hear that?
This is not awesome to the max, is what I'm saying.
Anyway, randomly, a Motendo shows up. They blame it on Rogue. We've got a throwback Mega Drive and a Genesis X-Men cartridge. It was actually Jake Wallace on our Instagram pointed out that there's an Apocalypse face that comes from the X-Men video game. I forget the full subtitle, but from the SNES one.
Oh, yeah.
As well. So they get pulled into the old system. We hear an old school dial-up modem, which I loved. We get ourselves inside Motendo. The Sentinels attack because they're actually in a city. Roberto just really does not want to use his powers. And I mean, the entire fucking world is glitching. You don't think that they wouldn't realize what happened.
I imagine from their perspective, it's like a dream. Like somehow you're just in a different spot. Like you don't see glitches when you're running around it. You know what I mean?
I will say I liked the little character beat of Roberto not wanting to use his powers. He's like, well, maybe my parents will be watching. You myopic motherfucker. Like,
oh, yeah.
You're just like, it makes sense that he's a good person, but he's that like selfish.
I love her.
Like,
do you
come
really
out
think...
of the closet to save your life.
Yeah. His storyline is so queer coded.
Yeah.
Suck that dick.
I know.
To save
I do.
Your
I
life.
Do. It is funny when you play that though. It's like we got transported inside a game. Suck that man off. I can't. My parents could be watching.
I can't. They could be watching. They could be filming.
So then they get to a phone ringing. They teleport. We get a loading screen. They're now in Genosha. We see either. I think it would have been Thunderbird or Warpath at the time, probably. Yeah. Blob and Sunfire.
Thunderbird, I think. Wasn't he on Genosha?
Yeah.
It was he was, but all the other characters were X-Force characters.
Oh.
So yeah, because there was also a little bit of Domino.
At that point, Feral was in Shatterstar. Were also in that issue.
Oh, that's right.
Just Warpath and Thunderbird's costume. Either way, he's a glitch. Anyway, they're attacked again. He's saved by Emperor Furiosa. I mean, a Hot Topic stalker, and we find out they're in a video game. Because duh, this is also Jake Wallace. Mozempic Mojo is here. you're like totally in a video game. Loved Mojo's reintroduction. What did you guys think?
Brent,
I don't hate it as much as I hated the original one because it was campy rather than just stupid, like 80s gremlin coded as a villain.
Well, I think it's because Beau DeMeo is a better writer than the writers of the Mojoverse and Longshot episodes of the original run. And I love the little cameos. It's like it's high camp. It's the kind of way that you can only make Mojo work. Like he's a little menacing. But he's got to be so over the top that you have to be in on the joke.
I do. Yeah, I actually like bringing Mojo back all these years is a really good thing because I do think in the original, while it was like campy, I don't think anyone writing it was like really like, ooh, I'm going to really go into it or get him. They just made them like fucking cocaine binge like nutto.
The thing about Mojo is like he's so we've talked about this before on podcast, but he's so ahead of his time as a character that like. The idea of like reality television was just so not a thing when he was created or even in the 90s show. Yeah. It became much more prevalent, I'd say, in the 2000s. So he makes more sense as a character a little bit later on.
Yeah, we get it.
I don't know how I feel about the skinny and then the TV amount and then he like explodes with weight because of like the amount of TV that's being watched. The thing that I don't like about it is that then there are like the classic... X-Men anti-fat jokes.
Oh, it's inherent. That, like, yeah,
they're coming. I'm like, I don't know what am I supposed to. It's like that Onion or that Clickhole article. Like, this model lost weight and she was inspiring, exactly. But then she gained it back and that was more inspiring.
It is inherently, I think, a semi-fat phobic character, if I had to put it. But they don't like. I would say that besides them commenting on his weight loss, they didn't really like at least double down too much.
They commented on it when he gained the weight again.
Well, I mean, anybody would. He gained all that weight. No,
it wasn't they said the word fat.
I also didn't love that when they show the overhead of, like, skinny Mojo, his body is just, like, fully connected.
Oh, because that's just his skin. Yeah,
it's just, like, a weird.
It's not great.
It looks. Nah. He's, like, growing out of the machine thing. I don't know.
But I guess that's what you could maybe picture it as, is rather than, like, it being weight, it's more like energy, which I guess is fat. So don't quote me on that.
I'm going to have to write that one down.
Energy is fat.
We find out that Jubilee is a video game star. It's based off of her own memories. We, you know, Dazzler had a gig. There's a passing reference to that, even though we still have had zero interaction of her besides just being long shots, like random stand-in girlfriend that one episode. What levels would your life be? What are, like, one or two of the levels?
Oh, you know, I guess high school and then college.
We'd all have a mall level, job. I'm sure. Yeah.
I mean, I'd probably, just because I love Metroidvania so much, it'd probably be some kind of medieval, like, gothic setting.
These are all ones where you're going to get murdered in?
Yeah, like, what kind, if this was a video game about your life, what would be the spin-off?
I think one of my games would probably be, like,
doing,
like, you know those games where you're like, you have to make 8 hamburgers and now 3 pizzas and now 4 cocktails.
Oh, that fits you really well.
But it's like a house party and it's like, oh, you have to make 4 cocktails and 4 pizzas.
Don't forget to socialize.
There was a video game that on the Switch called Moving, and I ended up playing with my ex, and we were like, oh, yeah, this is a lot of fun. And it gave me so much anxiety because moving is my least
too
favorite
real.
Thing in the world. I'm like, I need to stop playing this. This sucks. So that would be my worst level.
I love it. I think I would certainly have a level that would be like a high school or like college dating, like doing first dates and fucking them up or just being like a weirdo on
date dream daddy.
Yeah. Or like going to a club, trying to meet people at a club because I'm terrible at that.
Fuck up date simulator. It's like you've got 800 options of things you can say.
It's all wrong.
Each interaction, but only one of them is correct.
Oh, my gosh.
I would have one where I was on that airport bombing.
What?
Oh, what? That's right. The one in Ireland.
Oh, Jesus.
No, that was in Belgium.
Okay.
I don't
know. Well, I mean, if we're talking about what actually happened in the TV show we watched, then whatever life-threatening one would be the
real
one.
Is it just hide? I guess.
No, it was a lot more than hide.
I can see you being like a bomb diffuser in that. Like, that's what you've got to go do in the airport.
Yeah.
Become a civilian. I love it. All right, then let's talk more about Jubilee's actual levels. We get some die in real life stuff. Get the main thesis of the pitch, be young forever, never grow up. Kind of like that, actually.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing right now, I guess.
Sure. Reliving a TV show that we have no right to review.
Hey, Mojo does bring up that the old X-Men are old school. We get some Who's the Boss of Storm, Jean, Xavier, Magneto, and Cyclops, A Different World, Bishop, Sunspot, Darwin, seemingly. Mm-hmm. It looked like him. Jubilee, Storm, Northstar, Rogue, Forge, and Gambit. And then a Summers vs. Grey divorce court. Love these little nuggets. They recreated them really nicely.
It was so good that, especially A Different World, it's like it's clear that it's this episode is written by a gay black man of a certain age who remembers A Different World, which was a very cultural touchstone like in the late 80s, early 90s.
All right. Well, let the games begin. It's X-Men, The Rise of Jubilee. We get some old school hi-fi pixel graphics, almost Scott Pilgrim versus the World, which was obviously a very pull of X-Men Arcade. We see the characters select Jubilee, Colossus, Sunspot, Magic, Longshot. And I think I know they released like an eight-prong one, but I couldn't fully get it. We end up on the dystopian street, stage one, which is basically Days of the Future's Past. Did you guys guess all the names on the Wanted poster?
No, I continued watching the episode.
I took a picture of it and just forgot to look at it again.
I think I saw Wanda on there.
Yeah, there was Wanda and Quicksilver. Yeah. There was definitely Beast, Iceman, Storm, Colossus, Polaris, Nightcrawler, Wolverine, Kitty, maybe Xavier, and then there was like 3 or 4 other ones. So I'm sure someone put it up somewhere, but I'd rather we post it.
That's Jib Job.
It's Gremlin, the one from the opening again.
This is another example of the fact that magic already happened. like all the Limbo stuff already happened. If we've got both Morph and last issue, you know, turning into her as Dark Child and as magic, and this one is magic in like this simulation as a character choice, then they've just skipped over this entire story.
Well, like, do you ever think flashback that they would backdoor pilot to do a New Mutant series?
That would take place in the past in order to make this
sure.
Or they just bring her.
Well, no, that's what I mean. Bring them in now and then just tell their backstories over time like the original X-Men used to.
Yeah, because they've introduced Cannonball already and, you know, they may have backfired.
Season
back
2, they say, sorry, you're not going to be joining our team.
Maybe they have
you're
like
a Sunspot. You're doing this
I mean,
new team.
It could be, we can get more into this in the next part of the episode, but it could be like Magneto has to have the New Mutants now as the next
ooh,
generation.
That'd be
like, you could have an episode like where Wolverine goes to Japan and like reminisces and stuff. You could have,
I thought you
like,
were going to say rims. I was very confused.
You could have Magic go to Limbo and she's just like, ah, these old stomping grounds. They brought a lot of. A lot of struggle for me.
A lot of old demons here.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it's not.
And also Wolverine is there.
It is a kid show, but it's not. So there isn't. I mean, most like dramas nowadays, right? You'll kind of drop people into the character and then you go back in time and fill it out a little bit more. But we also have to see Colossus more first, too, I feel like.
Yeah.
So maybe the two of them are running around somewhere. We then jump into real like X-Men arcade graphics, almost old school HD remaster stuff. I classic. Love that they even did the standard definition and high definition image extender so that when they were doing those sequences, it was only the size of a SD TV and had the extra art. Special moves. We also get to see Savage Land of Stage 2. We see Sauron. We get Jubilee injured. She's saved by the Stranger.
What do you think the audience members were cheering for? It wasn't quite clear. Like, do they want Jubilee to win? Do they want her to die?
Yeah, they just
die?
Like seeing people beat it. Well, because that's like Longshot was always their big
I feel
spectacle.
Like they started.
It's like Gladiator Arena is basically what it is.
They started booing before future Jubilee showed up. Then they're like cheering again. I don't know.
They're a fickle
bunch. Have you ever been to a wrestling match?
No. No.
They're great.
Yeah.
If they were actually going to get murdered in the wrestling match,
then
I'd
be really cheering. Yeah. We get our final first glimpse of Spiral as well, and this woman needs a new job.
She is doing it all. She is just stressed.
The final stage is Asteroid M. Roberto's parents are more balanced than he lets on. Speaking about his Miha, saying, you know, not all mutants are bad, and him going, yeah, they are. Fuck them.
I fucking love that line.
So queer coded.
I love that line. I think that's great.
I hate them fags.
I think it also shows it's like an insight into how you can just develop bigotry, even in a family where you don't think like that's a common.
Just
like,
your guilt.
Even if
yeah.
you're like those kind of like progressive liberal parents, whatever, that you could have a kid who. You know, they try and like adopt some view to hide and protect themselves.
Right. And it could be, you know, the maternal figure, mom is perfectly fine, but the dad is the one
also,
who is.
Also, yes.
Like, in the comic, he's an asshole.
Yeah. So that's clearly.
No, that's a great point. Especially in, I mean, certainly my immigrant family was very much like that. Roberto has a major eye roll at Jubilee's first world problems of Magneto being a hot dad, which I thought was, I think that might have just been weird animation, but like he really does just go like, fucking bitch, shut up. Roberto gets killed for a little bit because he's
they just break his spine.
Yeah.
I do love how real the flashing lights is for the original series, the original video
well,
game.
So what's really crazy is I'm pretty sure because I looked up and I was really depressed that they did not use Magneto's welcome to die line from the video game. But as I was playing that clip to double check it, the laugh I think was pulled directly or the person that plays him just literally mimicked it perfectly. Mm-hmm. So they really did get all of their video game stuff.
It's actually they reconstructed it from James Earl Jones' voice over the years.
Well, and I mean, I was talking about this with a few folks online, but like they nailed all the game references because like no one liked the Nintendo. Did you ever play the Nintendo one, Kalen?
I did.
That was awful. It was so bad. It was like a shitty top-down one. And then the Genesis one was the one that everybody remembers, but the first Genesis one was impossible. And then obviously everybody loves the arcade game.
Yeah.
I like I just lost in my head. The fact that that Dazzler wasn't available line.
Yes. Yeah. She's not. No, not for her. So Sunspot's dead, but they got an extra life. Who gave that to her? There's a lot of shared trauma romance budding. Really cute. Do you ship these two?
Kinda.
This is the first time that I haven't disliked Jubilee. I mean, this run is the first time I've not disliked Jubilee in animated form.
She's doing great.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. I think it's cute. I think it's like it makes sense to attractive young mutants who are living under the same roof, ostensibly. Like
trauma bonding.
Yeah. I mean, for an episode that has two of my least favorite characters, for me to not be blindingly furious, I think is a triumph.
Yeah,
I do love the line, "I don't speak justifiably angry Portuguese." That was well done.
Yeah.
They are saved. They get outside the Matrix and into broadcast servers. The mystery woman is none other than Old Lady Jubilee, a.k.a. Abscissa, who was in a Wolverine number 50.
I know. Like one issue.
Mm-hmm. Her teeth hurt, but she was a Wolverine number 53. She had the same backstory where she had broken out of Mojo's beta testing. She's a digital replica that survived the levels. A lot of commentary on nostalgia and living in the past at this point.
Yeah. Yep.
Gut punched me. I was like, I mean, I, well,
do,
yeah,
go
ahead.
Do you feel
bro.
Like it was a gut punch? Because I always feel like that, I feel like a lot of reboots do this where they all have in a moment where they go, hey, by the way, audience, you've got to accept that this is going to be different. And I have to tell you, this show will be different. I know it's similar to what you thought it was, but it's going to have to change. And I find it exhausting.
Oh, it happens all the time. But I think particularly this property, sorry, I should say everyone else that fucking sits online complaining about the good old days should have gotten a gut punch. I loved it because I was like, fuck you people. Like, this show has to move on.
Yeah.
These series have to move on. These characters have to move on. This is not your fucking mansion from 40 years ago. I mean, it still is, but like, let these things move and evolve. Any other thoughts on that?
No, I agree with everything you just
said. I feel like it's that meme of the guy finding treasure, and it's like, it tells you the truth, and the truth is, nostalgia is killing you. Let the X-Men grow and evolve. And he's like, nah!
Yeah.
We get to a final boss. These fucking fight scenes are pretty incredible. Abscissa's killing it. She's got firework blades, firework skates, fireworks.
Jubilee could do this the whole fucking time.
she had the power from within.
The
see?
Whole time.
She needs like 80 years of running these levels over and over again.
I mean, everything else she's done so far is be Party City. What useless.
Well,
garbage.
Isn't her real ability some? Didn't they finally, like, they, her real ability is like some sort of thermonuclear something something? Like, she's never done anything with it anyway, but I thought that was the whole, like, point now that it's not just fireworks.
I feel like there was something where they mentioned, yeah, actually what's really going on here is interesting, which, well, it's not.
Well, it's a little bit like Iceman. Like, Iceman is an omega level mutant, but like, is it just played for a joke for so long?
He used to
so
just
like,
make snowmen.
Yeah,
okay.
Made snowmen, right?
Snowman.
Yeah, or like just even like little icicle things, but it's like, no, this bitch can like freeze the world. Yeah. So,
well, Roberto activates his powers finally. The Jubilees do a duo attack. Very anime. We get a double Hadouken. Mojo explodes.
So going back just a little bit, because I think Roberto was right a little bit to be hesitant about doing anything on TV, because unlike regular TV, which is broadcast in your country, this is broadcast galactically. And so like anything you do, maybe you should be concerned who is going to see this, because that's got the most views of probably any show anywhere.
I mean, that's very fair.
No.
I mean, also, Mojo not knowing your power levels or what your powers are is a good thing.
Yeah.
If you good want to try to stop him, yeah.
Well, they forget all that and they kiss on the bed when they get back from Mojo.
Mojo goes. And...
I'm glad they didn't...
And then he climbs on top of her.
Mojo and Jubilee kiss.
Yes, very hot.
I like Spiral just smacking in the back of the head, basically, after he's already, like, in turmoil.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I really hope... I just want Spiral to have more. She, I mean, it's good for her to be somewhat of a mystery, but she's just so interesting. And I'm sad that, what is it, Major Domo was not in this either.
Yeah, that's true. Major Domo I'm okay with. I've always loved Spiral. I think it's the visual...
such a cool fucking design.
Yeah. I like that she just seemed like an exasperated woman who's just tired of this shit.
She's managing up and
that's
managing
what it is
down.
I always think she's gonna end up like switching or like turning hero, and then she never does, and I love that too, because she's like, oh, here we go again.
It's too hard. I'm just gonna stay. My benefits are too good.
She does for a hot second a lot of the times, and it just kind of, it just goes right back to her being
kind of bad.
Let's talk life death part one.
Well, I did have one little thing,
please,
because we entered we entered the Mojoverse, and Mojo was looking for a new hook to attract audiences. His solution was to move away from the golden age of television by jumping into games. But I feel there are plenty of television opportunities he should consider adapting. So I'm just going to spitfire list a bunch of those TV show ideas, and you can just stop me if I need to be.
We won't.
Band of Brothers of Evil Mutants.
Cute.
X-Files. Friends of Humanity.
That's great.
Succession.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
It's Always Sunny in Genosha.
Oh, that's cute.
One Piece of Husk.
Jesus.
That cancel that one.
What does that mean?
Is that on Skinemax?
Fleech Bag. It's Fleabag, but for Leech.
Wait, is a child trying to have sex with people?
Priest.
Period. Trying to have sex with priests.
Oh, no. Sexy priest.
Hellfire Star Gala Actica.
Jesus Christ. I thought that's what I write.
The Marvelous Mrs. Marvel.
Love.
That's good.
Narutoed.
Oh, his run style would be very, very funny.
The Haunting of X Mansion.
Okay.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
And the Red Queen's Gambit.
That's fun.
Like the Queen's Gambit?
Yeah, we got it.
But if you
That was the one I didn't.
If he wants to stick with games, here are some other titles he should consider.
No.
Inferno, which is just Diablo.
Okay. Yeah.
Belasco's Gate 3.
Right.
But not do the first two.
Too bad.
Gene's Dead Redemption or Red Dead Redemption.
Redhead's Dead Redemption.
Golden Egg 007, Fortnite Crawler, Shadowcat of the Colossus, Below Street Fighter. It's just a Morlock game.
Below Street Fighter. Okay.
And then Grand Theft Auto Savage Land and Mario Tennis. I just think Mario Tennis is a fun game. Mojo would do well to adapt it. It's just a fun game.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, thank you for
that.
Those are great.
That was a lot of fun. That's a great joke, or as I call it, a 16-bit.
Hey, let's get it out of here. Hey, you know what? That's a good episode. We've been almost superior. Thank you so much. You can find us on
Tip your service.
All right, Life Death Part 1, based on the October 1984 comic. Life Death Part 1 sees Storm teaming up with a mysterious Forge to regain her powers, but his reason for helping her might destroy their newfound friendship, all while a malevolent force hovers in the background. This episode does more in 11 minutes than most shows do in 40. I loved it before you jump into it.
I didn't feel like either one of these were too long or too short.
It kind of worked.
Yeah. I was surprised. I was like annoyed at first, and then I kind of really got into it.
Tag team.
We got
smartly.
Two people fucking in each group.
There you go.
could the life and death section been a full episode? Probably, it's gonna have its own part too. Yeah, but I mean, like, could you have had more of like the build up of their relationship?
Yes,
more of them like interacting. I think so, but you don't necessarily.
I like the efficiency of the storytelling.
Yes.
They want Storm off the table for a certain amount of time. If they had one issue of her life death, then
she's back.
She would have been immediately back.
Yeah.
I do think having more emphasis on showing a time skip probably would have been good, because I think of that Last of Us episode with the what's his name? Ron Swanson.
Oh, the gay couple.
I'm like Ron Swanson and the guy from Looking. Having something where it
talking about shipping people.
You can feel the time really.
Nick
go
Offerman
on.
And
where,
Murray.
Where Storm says something like, "It's Murray been Bartlett. 3 weeks."
Love that exposition. Yes, we start off. We've got the nice Forge's house. Storm is wearing the white overalls that she had from the comic. Well, she's missing that pink gown she tried on like a fucking weirdo. They're trying to eat that bison chili. Any friend of Charles is a friend of mine.
I don't know what the fuck he was talking about with bison chili.
No.
He's like, the lean meat allows the spices to do their work. What do you mean? What does
Come
that
on,
mean
cook.
For?
You tell us.
I don't know. Bison chili is delicious, but I don't know what he's talking about.
He's trying to impress a girl.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's very much like the comic, too. Like, you're just like, these are two fucking awkward people stumbling over each other to, like, fall in semi-love.
I do want bison chili now.
Forge's power explanation was a bit silly. It's like kind of like, you know how people only use 10% of their brain? I use all of it.
20%.
But to be fair and comics accurate, Forge doesn't know what he's doing. And so he's just bullshitting.
Well, that's a newer thing, though. They've tried to make him stupider. For humor's sake.
I don't think he has.
In the last 5 years, they really
goofy dad.
I don't think of him as stupid. I just think of him as being like, I've got some special power, and it's really hard to detail how I know what I know. And so he just gives this flowery, the art comes from inside me, and some ways I'm just keyed in more toward my mechanical self.
I guess I actually don't mind that character evolution only because
evolution.
Evolution.
No, it's a devolution. Is well, what it is.
But I think the problem is that for the most part, the smarter you make someone, the more almost like.
How could
evil?
You not solve this problem?
Yeah, or like evil they have to become, or
it's
like
the
malicious.
Well, they just turn him evil for a hot second, yeah. Because they didn't know what to do with the character. Because
there's like four. I think of Dr.
It
Nemesis
Box or whatever.
Yeah, Dr. Nemesis, or like it's the whole absent-minded professor like
yes.
thing. Like you have like take. Yeah, it's like somebody who's incredibly brilliant, but they've got to like be a little wacky.
Well, Storm is lamenting the loss of her power. She's also being a little bit ableist. She's like, well, you fix yourself. And he's like, there's nothing to fix, babe. It's just got to adapt and be creative and live life. So I thought that was like,
yeah,
really
she
cool
should
job.
Just hold a lightning rod or something.
We then get a nod to Beyonce's American Requiem because they're riding horses.
Right.
Ahead of its time.
Yeah.
I mean, she rode horses in that episode with Rogue when they were hanging around the New York Comic Con.
That's true.
Did
and
you?
Then that squirrel looked at her and laughed.
I did.
That
like,
squirrel was Forge.
I did like that Storm was basically in a Fleetwood Mac song. That's all thing.
Yeah.
Well, and it's very different from the life.
Issue.
Yeah, because it's he's got like this gigantic fucking digital mansion, essentially, and now it's more of like a rustic Wyoming home.
Yeah, well, they're both in Texas, so which is like I remember when I read the comic, it was much later after it was published, and I was like, that house is amazing. That's in Dallas.
Yeah,
what the fuck?
So this is Texas.
Yeah,
there's a lot of income inequality in Texas.
I'm glad that Horace knew when to stop.
That's true.
Because she was not in control of any
no.
fucking thing at
oh,
all.
Oh, yeah. No, she was going to Thelma and Louise yeah. over that cliff.
That horse was going full speed like it was the ring. Please tell me someone remembers
yes,
that
yes,
horse.
Yes.
We all remember that horse.
Of course. We do get to see Forge's pinboard. It's got the X-Factor team we've already met.
People lost their goddamn mind on that.
Havoc, Polaris, Wolfsbane, Multimole Man. You've got Forge cooking. You've got Hot Shorts.
No Quicksilver.
That's true, actually. Yeah,
he was
too busy
image,
on the wanted
though,
poster.
But he was in
he?
That. He was on yeah. the X-Factor image.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was in the image.
He's on the far, far end.
Maybe
he's too fast for you, Clark.
Yeah, I couldn't see.
I just love that Forge had a photo of himself very sexually walking up a beach.
Oh yeah, wearing his hot shorts yeah. from his fucking
it's Instagram.
Comment.
Yeah,
yeah. That's the thing. We needed to see him in that image in this cartoon.
I wish he opened the
just like
door
our friend Josh, who we met at FlameCon.
That's
he was
right.
like he did the cosplay of that.
Joshua Cantone, is that right? Did I say
Cantone. You did? Yeah. You did. Did you notice the little Easter egg of Bastion?
Yes, baby. Yeah. In the bottom right corner, you got to really fucking move fast and pause that shit. You've got Forge buddied up with not only Dr. Adler, who seemingly could have been the original Dr. Adler or just Mystique at the time, but you can see the iconic black and purple costume that Bastion wears. I need more of this immediately. I don't know. How do you all feel about it?
I don't like Bastion, but I like the Easter egg.
I don't know who that is.
You know who he is.
Bastion is... he was sort of like the kind of a version of Nimrod in the 90s.
I remember now.
Yeah.
That's right. I remember now.
He was in the Motherboard stuff, Mothervine stuff.
Yes.
Wasn't he?
Yeah, we
Blue,
read X-Men
so
Blue.
We read
right.
You remember that bad series from 7 years
oh,
ago?
Yeah, actually,
that,
I do remember.
That bad series that was not as bad as the, most
other
of the
series,
other ones.
Yeah.
Series.
Yeah.
We then get Storm using the machine. She attempts to use her power. She even speaks an extra vibrato, like when she has her powers.
I would love, because that's the same kind of thing in like Dune, where the witches have the voice and there's like this over effect to the way you're speaking. I would love to be able to do that. It's just like a background super, like a useless superpower. You just sound authoritative.
I don't know.
The wind.
Kudos to Allison Seeley Smith, who literally gives an Oscar-worthy performance in my mind. I thought she did fantastic in this episode.
Yeah, she was very good.
She's just crying out for those winds, baby. Hear her, and they weren't answering.
Give her an Emmy.
Oh, that's right, because it's a TV show. That's why I wrote a word.
No. She's getting EGOT just for this.
Yeah,
yes.
Give her a
They're
Grammy.
Giving an Emmy and a Tony.
I will say, like, all the voice acting across the board, it's fascinating and fun to know, almost watch the actors themselves evolve into these characters and evolve with the time. So they were reading lines written back in the 90s, and that's why they sounded so insane
Forge
sometimes.
Forge and Storm have chemistry.
Oh,
those
they're
voice actors.
Fucking.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
So that's exactly it. Storm?
Yeah.
Storm needs to know, why is fixing me so important to you? And we learn the backstory of Forge, that he needed the government's money, so he's been building devices to neutralize mutants, a.k.a. Storm.
What did you guys think of the change from the comic, because like Forge reveals to her, he just, you know, blurts it out. Whereas in the comic, she overhears a conversation between him and, like, I think it's Henry Gyrick.
Yeah.
And then I think this is a better, this works better to me than like the accidental, like, Three's Company,
yeah.
The Three's Company-esque, like, sort of.
Also,
you know,
what phone would she pick up? It doesn't exist anymore.
Well, in the 90s,
oh,
it
that's
does.
Fair.
Yeah.
Quicksilver is not in that picture.
Oh. Anyways, so I like it as well. I think that it makes the attempt to be a better person on Forge's part seem more legitimate because he's also coming clean.
Oh, he's not in the picture I have.
About his intentions. Sorry, we have a fact check on our fact check.
Yes.
It seems that he is there.
Yes, just not in the picture that I had been looking at.
Yes, well, wow. You were looking at the wrong pictures, sir.
It's a magic character right there.
Yeah.
He just keeps changing.
And we all, it was a Mandela effect. We all
It was Mystique. This whole Mystique was in all four of those photos. Yeah. She just kept jumping from one to the other, changing into different characters.
I love that.
Scientists in Scotland were the ones who used the power collar. Is that a reference to Moira?
Could be.
I would love
it. It's Nessie. It's Nessie.
Nessie.
But it could have been, we had Mystique as her for a while, so it could have been.
Oh,
that's right.
Spot Mystique on.
If we don't want to shove Moira
under the bus
under
too
the
fast.
Bus,
yeah.
Quick, exactly.
Wait, but no, this season's moving so fast, she'll be a robot killer
by
the end of
it. She uses Banshee's face.
My favorite part about this, too, is everyone's like, wow, the series is just moving so fast. I'm like, they went back in time to tell stories that happened before any of the 92 was supposed to generally have taken place, right? These are all just lifts from the 80s.
You know, at times I'm just going to go with it. I'm just going to go with it is how I say it.
You of all people should know the perils of trusting those in Washington. Really powerful conversation between the two folks.
I gasped with that because I was watching it like a Saturday morning cartoon Wednesday morning when it premiered. And it's like, I live in Washington. Am I not supposed to be trusted? I shouldn't be trusted.
Yeah, because you lie. You're a weaver of lies, just like Forge. This motherfucker is
Was that a Real Housewives line?
You're a weaver of lies. Go, you know, he's
you
going.
Know what you are? A weaver.
He's selling hard. You're a goddess. Powers be damned. He wants that power puss. I don't know. I shouldn't do this to Storm. He says he loves it, like really over simping. She slaps the shit out of him. She said, you meant to make me a goddess. Instead, you fashioned a fool.
So the thing that she's holding when she's like when he reveals it to her about trusting people in Washington, that looked like Stark Tech, right? Like it was red and yellow like Iron Man.
Oh.
It looked a little bit like that.
I think it was just because it was off, because usually when the power collar is on, it's like pink, right? It's like the pink energy and then the yellow collar.
Yeah.
But it could, I mean, they could very well easily tap into that and just pull on that.
It just felt very much like the color scheme of Iron Man. Yeah.
Storm attempts to run. She stopped like glowing red eyes. She drops through a ceiling. A very fun reference to the comic. And then Lady Bird comes in and chomps Forge. It's actually the adversary.
Lady Bird.
I don't know. I just was like, she's a fucking. I mean, I know it's a man too. It's just like a
woman.
Weird.
I'm an owl woman.
Was it an owl or a raven? It was.
I think it was an
tell.
Owl because they were talking about the owl.
But
before.
Oh, but I was gonna say yeah because there was like an owl. There was also like an owl face in the mountains if you pause it. And then there was also I think during one of their dinners
when that owl didn't kill it. The horse. Didn't kill itself. We saw that owl. She talked about the owl.
There's the owl. It's following us. And there's also like eyes in the ceiling at some point. I think Andrew and I thought
very creepy horror
loved
stuff.
It
was really well. Like I mean, like last episode with the Inferno stuff. Like definitely some like you know creepy imagery. This time, I love that they're leaning into that.
Any other thoughts on this week's episode?
I'm surprised they're bringing the adversary. I'll just tell you that. That is
without like over spoiling it.
Well, who
what
else
the
would
fuck
they use as
it?
The main villain in that storyline?
I'm saying I didn't know any of this was going to happen in the series. I didn't know about like Storm losing her powers. I didn't know they were going to adapt life death. Like I'm just surprised pleasantly that the adversary is going to be in this. Yeah.
Well, it's good that you didn't read the titles for all of the episodes because they spoiled the shit out of so much.
I did not want to. That's why I don't know what the upcoming episode titles are.
Because when you see Motendo Life Death Part One, you know there's an owl coming in there, baby.
it's the real pure honey of episodes.
Yeah.
You were gonna ask Adam.
Oh, I was just...
Was that spoiling anything?
Yeah, like, who is the adversary?
He's a big old bad guy that's linked into Forge's past that the X-Men have to deal with, and it leads into a very significant phase for the X-Men in the comics.
We see him in the most recent or second most recent...
Resurrection of Magneto.
When Storm's seeing all those different...
Mystical
villains.
You may know the adversary as the Mothman, and he terrorizes northern Pennsylvania.
A real cryptid, I know. It sounds like it. We'll see. We'll find out next week. Let's get on to some Mutant Madness.
Mutant Madness. Last year, she's got the look. This year, it's X-Men's wear. Yep, Mutant Madness. It's on its fifth week, and it's getting fiery. We are almost done with the Sickening 16, y'all. But you can still vote if you go to our Twitter at HomoSuperiorX and Instagram, HomoSuperiorPodcast. And you can vote on both platforms. It doesn't count against you for your vote. So, as I said, Sickening 16 is almost done. We're almost in the Ornate 8. So I'm going to ask all y'all. So we have the top two looks now for Cyclops. You've got the Krakoa Cyclops versus the X-Men Blue Cyclops, the one that Jim Lee designed. Adam, of these two, which do you think is going to win? Which do you want it?
I only wear my own underwear over my pants, so both should be X-Men Blue. But I feel like there's going to be an uprising against it because it's so classic.
Twitter got mad about X-Men Blue Cyclops winning over X-Factor Cyclops, and I'm like, y'all voted for him. You realize that, right? Like, this choice. The vote's right there.
That's on you.
That is on you. All right, so... Clark, let me ask you. So we get the top two looks for Bishop that are going to go into the Ornate Eight. You got Red Bishop versus what I think is a bit of an upset is the Marauder Bishop. Which do you think will win? Which do you want to win?
We're getting a wild amount of recency bias in these polls. The fact that we have Krakoa, Cyclops, both of these two for Bishop, and at the very least we have Teen Angel. There's a lot of recency bias going on.
I think, but there's also a nostalgia bias happening as well because of Cyclops, his X-Men Blue look winning is very nostalgia. But of these two, which of Bishop's...
One looks bad and one looks good. So I hope...
Which one is which?
I'm finishing it up. I hope that Red Bishop gets through because the other one just...
Looks too good.
It just looks boring. It's like, oh, good. Someone's got a cat suit on and they're walking around. They're doing some sort of 007 shit. There's literally nothing exciting about this.
Nothing that screams
Bishop except the fact that he's wearing his red.
I am shocked that the original Bishop look didn't make it.
I don't like it. I'm glad it didn't win. I agree with you, Clark, that I love the red Bishop.
Red Bishop is the one sexy. I think should win. I agree with that. So, Brent, so we know that Brown and Tan Wolverine made it into the Ornate Eight.
Yes.
And right now, as we're recording, Patch is going up against X-Force Wolverine.
Yes, that's correct.
So which of those two do you want it to win? And which do you think is going to win against Brown and Tan?
I don't think either of them are going to win against Brown and Tan. I think people love the iconic Wolverine look more than anything else. And I think that they... don't like the blue and yellow color combination, which is why Brown and Tan won in the first place. If I had to guess, I think Patch is going to beat out the X-Force Wolverine look. They're just gray and black with red eyes because it's basically the same as all of his others, but just a different color scheme.
Yeah,
it's like when you toggle the looks that you can have in Super Smash Bros. It's one of the,
one of the less used
ones. I'll say it's neck and neck right now on both platforms.
I like that X-Force. I do think that black and gray is what Wolverine's color should be given the type of person he is supposed to show up as.
I like that he has that for more like, you know, undercover black opsy type stuff. But
what's black and white and red all over? what's brown and yellow and kind of not mellow?
My new Specter. All right, so then the last is Archangel, the original Archangel look has made it to the Ornate Eight, and in a couple of days you'll be able to vote for Teen Angel versus Dark Angel.
Who do you want to see, Kalen?
So Archangel is a great look. I think I want Teen Angel to win the Sickening 16 and go on to the Ornate Eight, but I think Archangel will beat it out. I think the Dark Angel and Archangel are too similar. Yeah.
Do you think you'd be willing to tip the scales and cheat in order to get Teen Angel up there?
Yes.
What does that
mean? You know I'm capable of that.
Just lie about who won.
I'll do some.
You're just going to doctor photographs for us, so when you send it to us, we have no idea. Yeah. We don't look at your Twitter.
That's true. I can just lie. I can just, you know, be stealing the election. So...
Keep voting anyway.
Yeah. Homo Superior X on Twitter, Homo Superior Podcast, Instagram. Keep voting.
Your vote matters. Wink. Where your vote really matters, though, is in the news. Because X-tree, it's news. It doesn't care whether you vote or not.
I mean, certainly cares whether some people vote or not. So this is our weekly segment where we dish about the gossip, news, and rumors from the world of X-Men and MCU. And it's going to be gay as fuck because it's extra as fuck. So fuck you and listen to this shit. And sticking with the devil you know news, the Disney proxy fight, this is what I'm talking about voting, is finally over. The Disney board has had some serious drama in the past few months where, remember, we talked about Nelson Peltz, that shithead,
who was
low-key, high-key racist.
The worst.
And best pals with Ike Perlmutter, who said such gems as, why do we have a Marvel movie that is all women? Why do I need an all-black cast? That's the kind of guy who is going up against Bob Iger, who's not the greatest man in the world, but at least he's not a racist, woman-hating piece of garbage.
Nelson, yeah, he's the devil we know, as you said.
Yeah. Right.
Nelson Peltz sounds like a rejected Peanuts character.
Did you see like his like board, like people basically, there were the PowerPoint that was like, don't vote for this asshole. It was like so damning, and just like, just put that up on the wall while the voting's happening.
What were some of the things that said?
It was just like all the same shit that he had, but it was just like but it was written in very great business terms where I'm like, oh, there are a lot of consultants who do not want this to happen.
Also, like, Black Panther did so well for Marvel. Captain Marvel did so well for Marvel. I'm like, I don't understand. Like, why? Just so stupid.
Because
it's just
they hate them. Like, they hate people. They hate diversity. They hate any of that kind of shit.
But don't you think they like money more? I guess that's not true. Maybe they don't. Maybe they hate certain people more than they love
money.
No,
they want to torpedo things in order to then make it all about themselves.
Keep staying on that money.
Yeah. Bob Iger won his seat by 94% to 6%. And then Peltz lost his seat. He only got 30% of his vote. So fuck you and go to hell.
Yeah.
Who are the 6% that didn't vote for Bob Iger? Who are they? Name them.
Peltz.
Name them.
The 20% of the proxy people who supported Peltz, probably. Even probably 14 of them didn't either.
Yeah.
So John Bernthal, who is the Punisher, who wasn't the Punisher, Netflix's Punisher, and he's going to be an upcoming Daredevil-born Punisher, is still wearing the Punisher costume that's like the iconic one with that horrible face that
the skull?
The police love.
Well, did you see that there is imagery of like a cop that's wearing it as well?
Cole North.
Yeah, and so I wonder Daredevil is gonna like
story to change
if they will like tackle that.
I hope so. Mm.
Yeah, but I'm also worried that they won't tackle it well.
I think they're definitely gonna go into that. They've gotta retire that very publicly.
I guess. I feel Marvel pulls its punches on politics.
They kick out all the bad police wearing the Punisher outfit and then keep all the good police wearing the Punisher outfit.
Yeah.
Punisher could be like, all cops are bad, but vigilantes are worse. Yeah. And like break someone's neck.
I support the American justice system.
I thought he breaks his own neck because he's a vigilante.
Oh my God.
So this week, Dennis Camp has revealed the plan for the new Ultimate Universe's Ultimates, saying that there are going to be a global resistance network against the whole Makers, you know, elite
council.
Love that. So where the Ultimates, as you said, was channeling post 9/11 paranoia, this one is addressing the nagging sense that everything's gone somehow wrong, and that things are supposed to be better than this. And so in the original Ultimates, they were fighting terrorists, and this time the general public thinks they're terrorists.
Oh, I see.
Their basic mission is to overthrow the council and prepare the world for whatever is going to emerge from the Maker's time-accelerated city in 18 months. So they basically, it's 18 months to save the world.
Isn't this just Age of X-Men?
No.
Wasn't there like the X-Factor team? Weren't they like a bunch of terrorists, but they're really trying to save the day?
No, these are like already good people trying to make sure that the Maker's universe.
Is that the one where Psylocke and Blob were fucking?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then there was the
extremists.
Oh.
That was like Apocalypse and the.
Extracts. The Extracts. No.
Why do you ever have to bring that up? You always bring up X-Men.
Because everyone secretly loves it and they don't know.
Look,
one loves it.
We're sorry your point of references were so terrible when we first started this podcast, but you gotta stop referencing them.
I'm sorry. I'll wait for your next reference.
Here's my reference. They have 18 months to save the world. Madonna did it in 8 minutes.
So,
the other thing that Dennis Camp did say is that every issue is going to be one and done. And like it'll be like one full story in every issue, cool. Even though it's like pushing a full narrative. Mission. And then there will be a new hero introduced in every issue.
Oh, yeah, the first issue is Hank Pym and Wasp.
Really building out that universe.
And Hank Pym, like, I love that he doesn't have a traditional like hero body. He looks a little thick. Like, I love that.
So bigger news. Marvel's Fantastic Four has cast Ozark star Julia Garner, who also, speaking of Madonna, was in that failed abortive movie that she was supposed to be starring in, but then Madonna said, no, I don't want to do this. I'd rather do a tour.
What movie?
I don't remember that at all.
Yeah.
There was going to be... She was cast as Madonna by Madonna to be Madonna in this
movie.
Oh,
it was a biography.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was called Hung Up.
So instead, she's going to play Shala Ball in the Fantastic Four.
And we're going to have a ball while she's Shala Ball.
Shall we?
Shala Ball is the romantic interest of Noran Rod, the Silver Surfer in the comics, but now she will be the Silver Surfer in this.
She's a very good actor. She's really good in Ozark, and she was really good in The Americans.
What do you think?
I think it's definitely confirmation that's going to be, we already know it's going to be an alternate universe because obviously they're going to bring in the collapsing, incursion plotline. So I think this is such a great time to use it because it's a perfect place to have it and nobody should be upset and they should never be upset anyway. But now nobody can be like 616 assholes.
I have purposely not looked to see what the opinions from the neckbeards are, but this is not going to go well.
The dark web is not a great place,
scared.
Joe.
I think it's the white web is what you're talking
That's
about.
That's true.
Ain't that the truth,
yeah,
brother?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm all for this. So I'm not going to go into the spoilers part of what the rumors said, but Fantastic Four, as we know, is going to introduce Franklin Richards, Doctor Doom, Silver Surfer, and Galactus, and the film will take place during the early 1960s.
You thought Spider-Man 3 had it hard.
Yeah. Yeah. A million people.
The thing is that Doctor Doom, Silver Surfer, and Galactus are going to be introduced turducken style.
This is a Thanksgiving release, right?
Doctor Doom has already been living inside
which
Galactus.
Which one's the turkey and the duck? Daredevil? I mean, Doom, Doctor Doom or Silver Surfer?
Silver Surfer is definitely the chicken in this narrative. And I think we know who the duck is.
It's Howard.
Also being introduced is Terax.
Jesus fucking Christ.
One of Galactus's second.
Fine. Like the Terax is a throwaway character. That's totally fine. I mean,
Doctor
Doom
one to get killed.
And Doctor Doom will probably be like Victor Von Doom. Like they're not going to make him the big bad right now.
Ooh,
and
no, he's going to be the he's going to show
probably
up the very last second.
Victoria Von Doom.
Or
stupid. I saw several people on Twitter who were like, they're like, see, I told you they're going to make all these characters women. Here's my tweet. And you're like, dude, just chill.
Next, they'll be Valerie. Like, well, it is interesting they haven't named her, though, right?
Because Valeria? No, I thought they did.
I was going to say, if she's Frank's in it.
They haven't? I thought maybe I misread that.
I think they're purposely leaving her out so that they can have a Marvel
less
baby
women
at some point.
Less women announced in a property.
They just added a new woman. You remove one and add one.
Shala Ball. All right, let's get on with some issues. Our weekly recap of all things X Comics, as well as picking up all things in the new Ultimates universe. This week we have X-Men number 33, we've got Avengers number 12, and we've got Marvel, because it's a tie-in, and we've got Marvel Unlimited Infinity number 133. Let's start with X-Men number 33, Jerry Duggan, Joshua Cassara. The team continues to rebound from the Hellfire Gala with the return of Sebastian's son, ushering another undercutting of Orcus's human power, while its AI power expands, threatening both mutant and human alike. Shinobi Shaw's resurrection, and Sebastian wants him taking on squatters. What'd you guys think of this? He's been dead for a while, hasn't he?
Yeah, he hasn't been seen since early issues of the Marauders when Jerry was writing it. So he definitely Jerry likes him as a character
a lot.
When
they had the whole who's his father thing.
Yeah.
It's
not Shaw.
It's supposed to be Leland is the real father.
Seeing Shaw and remembering all the conniving he's done over the past several issues, I feel like there's got to be some interesting comparison between the way he thinks about surviving versus Moira thinks about surviving and the ways that they approach it. Because it seems
It
seems like Sebastian has a much better deal cut out for him where he's somehow able to make it out on top and rich.
Well, he's I think it's because he's a businessman survivor. Moira is just a literal trying to be a literal survivor. Like, she does not machinate very well.
Well,
how you say it?
It seems like she's
machinate,
like,
machinate, yeah.
Yeah, like he's trying to catch the wind and she's trying to create it.
Yes. Like it just always feels like she's running to whatever
she's trying
believes.
To ride that lightning.
Ride the lightning, baby.
We are in Madripoor. The Reavers attack the Princess Bar where the Morlocks have been holed up since riding the high seas in X-Men Dark. Emma's showing up in her hot new outfit. She's broadcasting, getting everyone up to speed where all the general chess pieces are. Darth Rogers is still hanging around. Would you want to see him post Fall of X?
No, I'm done.
I can't believe he's still there.
Such
a
weird
throw-in
to say, like, don't forget, this is still a plot line that could... We don't care. Shut the fuck up, Jared.
Somebody said, if you didn't want to read Uncanny Avengers, the most recent one, here's the one panel. That's it. You're done.
The Morlock Tunnels are raided. We see Wolverine springing into action, still killing a lot of people in very gruesome ways.
And that was it's also an homage to Wolverine in the Dark Phoenix saga when he's in the sewers fighting off all the Hellfire Club like drones.
Yeah,
and, like,
it's
Joshua Cassara after John Byrne, basically.
Got it.
Yeah.
So Shinobi enters. Sebastian's actual plan is to play both sides and foster Killian Devo. Shinobi breaks that up good and gives him up. We never really learned much about Killian throughout most of this entire run for someone who's literally running Orcus this whole time.
I don't think he's that interesting a character. I'm fine with him being taking like backstage to like Dr. Stasis or Dr. Gregor or like any of them. Like I'm like, yeah, he can just be like kind of a big bad.
It's funny you mentioned that because we're going through Final Fantasy Remake, the Final Fantasy VII Remake, and he's basically the boss of Shinra who like dies right at the end of them leaving. Jesus Christ, why can't I think of the name? Anyway, when they leave, like, it's just...
What were you saying about my references earlier?
Midgar. That's what it's fucking called, bitch. Fuck you. But no, it's exactly that, where it's like everybody else around him is so much more interesting, especially after he dies.
Absolutely.
But he's also had his brain scooped out by fucking Omega Sentinel. So he's been really operating as sort of a double agent this whole time, too.
When did that happen?
I don't remember that.
Tying up loose ends, baby. They're rushing
to the
end.
I feel like there's a lot of like the inner politics at Orcus that I just forgot.
So this was the thing that
really... Or we didn't see.
Well, no, that's what it pisses me off, because I think back when we did the Hiccupedia stuff and we're talking about when Hydra had its like seven heads and there was all these issues focused on their discussions, you got so little of the actual back and forth interaction between people, and that's the only thing I wish showed up more.
The physical designs for these people weren't interesting enough to continue to see.
I mean, well, and also they're changing the full-on thing.
Yeah.
That's why we should have had a Firestar storyline that would have focused on
all these people,
what they were doing.
It was just that one guy.
I also kind of, I said this early on, like when they were announcing the Dawn of X titles, I'm rooting for them, but like having an Orcus book would have been very interesting, like from a villain perspective.
Oh, totally. Yeah. It was just a lost opportunity, I think, as they were wrapping this up. Kamala phones a friend, Dr. Doom, asks for the New Mutants. Love that little reference. He gets involved over his own hubris. Deploy the X-Men of Doom. Slag, Volta, and Nerium, remember them?
Yeah.
Neither do I.
Sure.
They showed up
2 issues ago.
You remember them?
I remember anything they did actually worth doing.
They were in the woods or something.
Devos is eradicated.
They had tea together. Come on.
Cyclops reconnects with the rest of the team while getting his ass beat on the moon, and Sentinel City rises.
You know, they say that mediocre or bad art will bring down a story and great art will elevate a mediocre story. This is the latter, because Joshua Cassara being back on art,
gorgeous.
I immediately like this issue more than the last couple. Phil Noto is a fine artist. He is not the right artist to tell this kind of like, you know, end game, sort of like all this boom, big bombastic battles. Cassara's got the chops to do it.
I wish that Sentinel City... You got to go to Sentinel City.
Come on down to Sentinel City.
I wish that there were some references to Sentinel City like 2 years ago or something, as opposed to it coming out like in the Fall of X. Like, I would have wished that they had said something about like, hey, here's our actual plan. Because I feel like...
No, you're right. That they established the robots were in power, but, and they wanted to do something, but it was never like... I guess the plot line of the Dominion was always there.
Like their idea to have Sentinel City or actual Sentinel City?
Anything. Because I know that they had always had machinations to like conspire the humans versus the mutants, but...
Aren't all these Sentinels based on the Iron Man Sentinels? So wouldn't that only have started existing when Feilong took...
But they're making it sound like... We the AI have had this plan the whole time,
which is
humans versus mutants, while we focus on our big project, blank city.
Well,
we'll fill in the blank later. if Tony gets involved, it's Sentinel City. If someone else gets involved, who knows? Maybe we even do a water.
I'm just wondering how this is all going to like. They're apparently like yeah. Well, Fall of House of X and Rise of Powers of Ten are supposed to like start interweaving a little bit more, and it's not quite there yet. I mean, it is there because it's telling, you know, one big large story.
Right. I'm taking bets that Manifold will open a giant portal above Sentinel City, and every X-Men from every timeline and dimension will come out, and someone will say, to me, my X-Men.
And it's Arya just killing Omega Sentinel with a little knife.
She drops a little knife, she spins it around, stabs him in the head.
The Sentinel City's one weakness is dragonglass.
Let's talk Avengers number 12.
So my thing I looked at was when Callisto was sacrificed, was crucified at Madripoor.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy shit, that's fucked up. And I was like, oh, I forgot she did the same thing to Archangel.
She did.
She did exactly the same thing to Archangel.
And I'm like, sorry, bitch. Yeah.
Well, she was crucified on a capital T, which makes her special.
Yeah, his was kind of a X, not really.
We've got Avengers number 12, Jed McKay, Francesco Mortarino. Tony hand waves why the Avengers have done nothing for a few months, and then they finally kick ass and take names, but not before the return of an old Orcus villain. Yes, MODOK. I don't know when this takes place because MODOK decided to come back to Orcus after basically saying, peace, bitches, this is a failing operation.
His resignation letter, but then his unresignation letter. Yeah.
3D Man's also there. Don't know that guy too well.
That is a deep cut of a character. So he was introduced. I mean, he's an old character, but he's introduced in Kurt Busiek's Avengers and then brought in during the Avengers Initiative, which I think Clark read. I went back and read that issue that they referenced.
Avengers Initiative?
Yeah, number 19 during Secret Invasion.
I hated him.
He's not my favorite.
Aren't all men 3D men?
No.
Maybe you just couldn't see him fully.
So there was a...
no.
There was a Skrull that came during the Skrull invasion who was called Crusade, but he was also kind of based on the Captain Marvel. He was the Captain Marvel Skrull as well.
Oh. Oh, yeah.
It became him for a little bit, right? I don't know. Anyways. And he killed a lot of evil versions of Skrulls, and then 3D Man, who's able to see Skrulls, was like, just kills him. And there was like, what the fuck did you do? Yeah. This guy... So clearly he was just thrown the fuck out.
I don't love how Tony's like, guys, you know how I told you to stand back and stand by? Now is your time to help the mutants out. Like, fuck you. You guys could have helped. You guys knocked out all of their resources in 30 minutes.
Black Panther's been helping out.
Fuck.
Seemingly, or had been planning to help out.
They were all kind of floating around Wolverine.
Thanks, Black Panther. I really appreciate it. Everyone else, what were you doing?
Captain Marvel was like changing back and forth with the new woman, Yuna.
It took
Scarlet Witch has been busy with her store.
That's right. This bitch is just like serving up curios.
It took 10 mutants to take down the first Stark Sentinel that they encountered. Thor just punches through one instantly.
It's power.
You guys are like the corporate. You guys are corporate assholes. Like you guys want to like yes, pride, but only during June.
There's not a good in-story version reason for it, but the out-of-story reason is like you bring him in, it's just the story ends too quickly.
Yeah.
That's the reason. That's
100%.
Why.
Well, and I mean, because you did have the Unity Squad, so Captain, like it was really those just Avengers. You just hand wave it and say like there are other threats on the planet.
You could
like,
have fixed,
why do
you could fix this in one line.
It was just the unofficial Avengers were helping out.
Yeah,
to the official
if Tony came in and he's like, you remember how I told you guys to like hide away and like let me deal with this?
And you didn't listen.
And now it's now it's time to like kick things into gear. If they had just added a line like, what are you talking about? Oh, the mutants, right? We fucking hate those guys, right?
Oh my God.
Okay, we'll help you with your little side project.
All right. Anything else on Avengers? It is a kind of a two-parter, so we'll catch up with 13, I think, when that comes out as well.
Yeah, and Jed McKay is the incoming writer of X-Men when the From the Ashes era begins, and so I think there will be a lot of synergy there, and this is based in Alaska. I think they're like, is going to be like Cyclops' base, right?
Yeah, they definitely were heavily promoting that you're going to get a glimpse of the future, I think, in this kind of combat, this run.
Who's Yuna? Anyone know? Anyone who
you got to check out Captain Marvel number whatever it was.
Okay. I don't think they even did they even
I think
say? I thought it was like
her basically her new run storyline. I think after we stopped reading it from the Brood
stuff. Yeah.
I think is kind of left. I assumed it was related to the Quasar bands because she was saying the Nega bands were running out. I thought.
You know what? Good enough.
Yeah. It's a comic book. Let's talk about X-Men Unlimited Infinity comic number 133. The writer's the Steve Fox, Steve Orlando, artist Nick Roach. With the Unlimited team's floating island in free fall, everybody kind of just teams up to land, and then they use an assault of people from Morocco.
I love the idea of Richter bringing the ground up to catch the land, but
that's not how land works.
Well, it's, I mean, it would have crushed it.
I was going to say, wouldn't it just literally explode?
Because it was still falling. So it's not like, I don't know if Richter caught it and lowered at the same time.
Well, it's kind of like if you throw an apple up and then hold a sword and the apple's...
It's like when you throw an apple up and then you throw another apple and hit that apple and somehow they both land really nicely. Well,
but make a couple of sharp edges on the other apple.
So it's as if you threw an apple up and as it's coming back down, you threw a sword into it.
Yeah, we're just going to assume that's how physics works.
Still fun. I mean, they gave us a naked Shatterstar for it. So.
That's right. He was walking around in his little towel. You had WizKid and Trinary hacking the hacker. Sunspot wants his revenge. We get the return because this is just the Steve's fucking book and they'll do whatever they want. Solemn's back for one last score.
Of Wolverine's biggest new villain ever.
You know, this is the best kind of fan fiction. It really is. It's a lot of fun. It's like, oh, let's bring in all these toys that like Jerry and Karen and others aren't using right now and just like throw it in here. Great.
I know we haven't had them on Creator Crush in a while, but I would imagine to them, and I hope they would understand, like they feel this, is like it's a culmination of also so much of their work because they did a lot of work during the Krakoa era.
Yes.
And to bring all these characters and players back and really tell the stories they want, you can tell how much fun and passion they have for the product.
When Solemn entered by cutting a giant X through the doorway, I definitely got a I'm back, Piggy's vibe.
1,000%. All right. Anything else on the issues? All right. Pop. As always.
Better than I could have expected.
Yeah. As always, we like to wrap up with a little something we call Plug Me Daddy, where each of us get a chance to quickly highlight something that we've read, seen, or heard. I wanted to share with you our little homos, so we'd like to go first.
I'll go first. If you're in Washington, D.C., there's a bar you should check out called McClellan's Retreat. It has cocktails right now that are kaiju-themed cocktails.
Ooh, yes.
Did you go?
I did go.
Nice.
And they have like a bunch of different monsters that are the inspiration for drinks. So they've got like some kind of tiki drink. They've got a really great seaweed cocktail that's like a martini, so it's not as salty as an olive martini, but it is kind of like oceanic.
Hmm.
Really great drinks. The other drink that they have that is very popular there is like the Pepper Box.
Okay.
It's like a whiskey-based drink.
Pot's vagina.
It tastes like, yes. So they have...
You can do Pepper Pots like that, not Storm.
They have the Szechuan peppercorn oil that they freeze into ice cubes. And then depending on how spicy you want it, you stir the ice cube so it melts and dissolves into the drink. It's great.
I would just take a blowtorch to it because I wanted that spicy.
Sure, yeah. McClellan's Retreat.
Sounds great.
They have great drinks otherwise.
So I guess speaking of kaiju, I saw Godzilla X King Kong this week.
Oh, Jesus.
And it is so stupid, but so good in its stupidity. The fact that they basically throw out most of the human stuff.
Excellent.
Which is necessary. So I'm only going to give you one example from the first 20 minutes. So basically it's about King Kong finding a family of Kongs
in another
part of Underworld.
The lot, yeah.
In Under Earth, whatever it is. Classic. Anyways, so he first meets this like baby Kong who's like, let's say a toddler Kong. And he's like,
from the trailers.
He pokes it and then the thing, it bites him. And then that biting him like makes Kong scream and all the other Kongs are like mad and go after him. He picks up baby Kong and just start bashing everybody with the baby Kong. It is so funny. I'm laughing my face off the entire movie because it is nonstop stupid. It's so good, though. Watch that mess.
I saw something online that basically said that King Kong and Godzilla decided to team up when they both realized their mom's and their name Martha.
Yeah, I love that.
I mean, Mothra is involved. They're both named basically,
Mothra.
Yeah.
Oh, Mothra. Yeah, Mothra.
Wait, how do you know Mothra, too?
I can go. I and really enjoyed. I binge watched the Three Body Problem. It's the new U.S. Retelling of the Chinese book. I enjoyed it. It's been really fun. I can't wait for another season. I just probably will order the books and read them because it. I do think it has like a little bit of Netflix budget problem, production problem.
You shouldn't.
What? I shouldn't read the books?
Don't. Do not. They're. I think they're too heady to just read and then expect them to be. Done exactly like that.
Oh, okay. Well, I just mean either way. I want to have like both mediums, but it just was a really cool and very unexpected. And so I would definitely check it out. There's decent acting, lots of hot people acting as scientists. Mm-hmm.
It's and it's D.B. Weiss and David Benioff, right?
Yes.
Who did it, right?
So like, kind of next follow up. And it definitely has like, it's why I think it has a high enough quality, but it still has a little bit of Netflix making, but I loved it.
My pick is a graphic novel of a book I read many, many years ago that I loved. So it's Homicide, A Year on the Killing Streets, a book by David Simon, the basis for the 90s show Homicide. And David Simon is the co-creator of The Wire, my favorite TV show of all time. So the graphic novel is adapted by Philippe Squarzani. It is a gorgeous looking book. The book itself is fantastic. If you've never read it, it is basically a true crime book told almost like in a novel form. Like it is that like engaging and intriguing. It's fantastic, and the graphic novel is beautiful. Check it out.
Is Detective Munch in it?
Detective Munch is not in it. No,
he's part of that universe.
Yeah.
He's
in the Law and Order universe.
He's the most important part of all universes.
He's the nexus of all realities.
All right. Well, this is the nexus of our conversation because we're wrapping it up. We're done. We're
this
done talking.
Nexus.
I'm going to pass through that. This has been Homo Superior. You can check out our creator crushes. We've got one that's already out. It's Jordan D. White. And we got one that's coming out next Monday. It's Nathaniel Dahlquist. Both are fun for very, very, very different reasons. You should also check out Nathaniel Dahlquist's work, which is Wiccan and Hulkling and Wiccan, Love is Power. All that is available on YouTube under an account by the same name. And do you have anything else? I mean, is it just like guys go home?
Yeah. All right. Wrap it up. You don't got
to. Oh, yeah. There's Mutant Madness, Twitter. Instagram, Homo Superior X, Instagram, Homo Superior Podcast. Kiss your loved ones. Kiss yourself.
Kiss your enemies.
Bite.
Brent's breaking. We got to go.
Get out.
Bye.
Bye.